Log Talk Radio.
Okay, I'll open up his door.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Okay, all right. Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2635. That's 2635. Tonight we're going to have a really, really good guest on, and she's all bubbly, and we've had a few minutes to speak to her, and I'm just really happy she's here, and I'll be bringing her on in a minute, okay? But first we have a little bit of business to take care of, and the number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. All right. Now, I want to read the NASCA mission statement. It's important that people listen to what I have to say. We do read it, and we mean every bit of it. And there's a lot more that you don't even know about with NASCA. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways. Number one is educating the public. Very important. Especially as relating to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And as everyone knows, who knows me, prevention is a very big thing. They're all big. Prevention is really, really big for me, okay? If we could educate our children, educate our society that we live in, our neighborhoods, and so forth, that's prevention. You can help in ways like that, okay, about child abuse. But first you have to learn about it. Okay, so we do have these shows, and we have a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday when our special guests do come on, and they come on and they tell their story. It takes guts to tell your story. So I have put it in, you know, the NASCA website, okay, and tonight that we have a wonderful guest, and I'm going to stop talking for a minute here and let her get started. But first we have Pamela from Louisiana, and she's ambassador of Louisiana. She's also on the board. I'm on the board. We also have our guest. We have Bill from California. He's our he's the man that created all of this. He's our founder, okay? So everyone, please, come and support our guests, okay? We're here to support each other, to learn from each other, to help each other. This is what NASCA is all about, one of the many things that NASCA does, okay? So, Tanya, how do you say your name?
Hey, Tona.
Tona, okay, Tona, there we go.
Tona,
yes, okay, that's better. Okay, Tona Buck, and she is from Trenton, which isn't that terribly far away from me, okay? And where I am right now, anyway. And I'm not going to tell her story because she's got quite a story. I have her bio right in front of me. And at times, Tona, I will be taking, you know, some things from the bio. And we'll be going back and forth with the panel. So anyway, why don't you start by telling this from the earliest things that happened to you that you remember. And we'll go from there. Go ahead.
Okay, first of all, I just want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story. Like you said, it's never an easy task for a survivor to share such horrible things. And so this is how I like to introduce myself. Hello, my name is Tona Buck, and I'm a sexual abuse survivor. I started being sexually abused when I was 3 years old by my mother's then-boyfriend. He groomed me very, very well. My mother was a single mom with three children living in the city, and it started instantly. My mother and my father were married when I was born, and my father was an alcoholic, so my mother, you know, she kicked him out the house. And within a matter of months, this predator had worked his way into my home. So I can remember clearly, like people say that they can't remember their childhood. No, I remember the underwear that I had on when this grown man will come and sneak into my room on a daily basis. He started off really, really gentle with words. And so he would say things like, your dad is not here, and I want to be your dad. And, and being your dad, you know, you want to have to be a good girl to, so that I can be your dad. You want me to be your dad, right? And, of course, what little girl don't want a dad? So I always, start from three, I was hungry to have a father. And so it started off just gently just rubbing my backside, constantly want me to sit on his lap all the time. And he had my mother very blinded because she was just happy that to have a man that was so interested in her three children, especially the little daughter. And so time went on, and he went from, you know, just grooming me, touching me and giving me everything. You know, everything was a reward, you know, rub my butt, take me to the store, get candy, kiss me. And I knew, I didn't know what was going on. I just knew I felt uncomfortable. The first time this grown man at the age of three kissed me lip to lip like a grown person. And so he went from there to penetrating me with his fingers. And then when I got about five, almost 6 years old, he showed me my first porn and told me how good it was and how these people loved having sex. And literally at five, he tried to force a dildo in me. Because he was trying to open my vagina so he could eventually rape me. Like, I know it now, looking back over my life. And so I'm looking at these horns, and he's telling me how good it is. And he is literally, I am crying at this point because he is trying to force this big dildo in my little five-year-old vagina. So I didn't know what he was doing. It was wrong, obviously, until one day I was in the middle of the floor. I can see it. As clear as I'm talking to you, I was in the middle of the floor playing with my doll babies, and I had a Ken doll baby, and I had a Barbie, and they were humping because that's how I played. I played what I was being shown. So all my interaction at that young age is always my doll babies humping each other. And so my mother walked by the door. The door's open, and I was playing with my vagina, right? So it was normal, like, he was molesting me so much that it was just the normal feeling, like it was normal. It's like you eat me playing with my vagina became normal. That's because he did it so much. And so my mother walked by, and I'm never going to forget, she smacked my hand and told me that it was nasty what I was doing. And I didn't know what it actually was, but instantly I equated that to something bad, which I wish she would have told me that, because when she did that, when he started to try to molest me after that, I would try to pull the covers over me, because now I'm a bad girl. My mom has popped my hand. She didn't ask me why I was doing it. She didn't say, you know, where did you get that from? She just popped my hand and told me it was nasty and don't do it anymore. So now I'm with this grown behind man who is molesting me on a deli, trying to hold the covers over me. So at this point, he becomes violent because he's going to force that dildo in me. He is going to make me have oral sex with him as a kid. I remember clearly at 3-4 years old, him putting my little hands on his penis and making me, and the wet stuff coming on my hand. I didn't know what it was, but he had me so messed up because every time I would perform an act, he would always say I was a good girl until my mom popped my hand, and then I was a bad girl because at this point I'm not doing what he wants me to do. So at this point he's becoming very forceful, and I am screaming, and he is really trying to penetrate me at a young age. And so this went on for about a year, and the night that I had a safe haven, though, my grandmother, my grandparents live in South Carolina, and they have 165 acres of land. At the time, we had 165 acres of land, and so my mother would send me down there for the summer. So that was the only time that this man would not have, you know, I would not be in his presence. So right before I turned about seven, I remember coming home and seeing back at the door, and he didn't come with my mother this time to pick me up either. But when I got home, there were bags at the door, and I was like, good. And I used to scream, like, when my mother used to leave me with this man, I used to be like, Mom, please don't leave me. Please, because my mother was in this a real good organization, so she would go, like, every Friday. And so literally every Friday it was going to be, he was going to molest me. And then on Saturdays they would have, like, get-togethers with adults, and they would drink. And so I could always smell the breath on this man's breath when he was victimizing me. And so this one particular time, he knew that he had to leave. And my mother left me with this man again. And at this time, he was going to do everything in his power to rape me. I just remember hearing him say, I'm going to get it in you tonight. I'm going to get it in you. So I have a probably 200-pound man on a 60-year-old feral body. I'm sure he's trying to force his penis in my vagina. And I made a mistake as I was squirming, and I kneed him in his penis, and he buckled. And the rage that came in his eye, I thought literally that he was going to kill me. And so he comes over. He sees that I'm hurt, but he comes over, and he's trying to force me to suck his penis. So as so I throw up, and he is angry at this point. He throws me on the other side of the room. And when he throws me on the other side of the room, I break my arm. So that rage, he turned from rage to less aggressive at the time. He knew he had did something because he heard the scream. And so, of course, he groomed me. He was saying, if you tell your mom, she's not going to believe you. She's going to be angry. You've been a bad girl. If you just did, you know what I wanted you to do. This would have never happened. And those words played in my head for years. And so my mother comes home, and I'm in the room. Like always, my mother would come home, and I'd be in the bed. And the next morning, my mother comes in, and I can't move my arm. So she had to take me to the hospital. The hospitals and the doctors felt me through this whole process. Nobody asked, so what happened? And I was like, I told my mother I slipped out the tub, and because that's what he told me to tell her. So that's what I told her. And nobody thought anything else about it. I remember there was a time that his sister came over, and he was trying to rape me. And she came in. It was so ironic to me that she was, like, hysterical because I was home running by myself. And when she came in, he came downstairs. He was sweating. And I remember this so clear. And she says to him, and I hear her scream my name, and I come downstairs, and I have visually been crying. And he made an excuse for why I was crying, and I could barely walk. I go back upstairs. And I never knew why the sister was frantic when she knew I was home alone with him. And that was the part about my abuse. So later on, I found out that the guy who was victimizing me was from a family of predators. He was from a family of predators. So I know this because once I got old enough to tell my mother that I was victimized, I was in my early 20s. And of course she said, I wish you would have told me. And this is my motive and my motivation for everything that I do. I told her I didn't know what to tell. So I don't ever want a child, first of all, to be victimized, and secondly, not know what to tell. And so I remember, so after that, everybody in his family that I saw, I was like, so-and-so is a child molester. And listen, I, one thing that I would not do, once I got my voice, I warned. I was like, so-and-so is a child molester, because I knew they had a big family and he was around other children. And so this, and what hurt me the most was like when I his sister, and I called her my aunt, because, and she's my mother's best friend. And so when I told her daughter, her mother had just died, and I told her daughter that I was writing a book. I just happened to see it, and I was like, I'm writing a book about your uncle. And I said, he molested me and my sister, because I had an older sister, and he did horrible things to her, too. But I said, he molested us. And she said, oh, but his dad molested my mother.
Oh, boy.
His dad molested my mother. So these men, so the father was raping the daughters in the family. And for some reason, deep down inside, the sad part was, let me go back. Everybody knew this man was a child molester. Let him go up the street with my mother with two children.
Let's stop there.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Tona, hold on a second. We have an hour and a half.
Okay, great, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of questions here. I'm so sorry you went through that. And, you know, so often, look, I was one of 14, okay, of a guy that was going around to schools and picking up girls and kidnapping and raping them. And we all have our stories, and they're all disgusting, and they're all very angry. And I'm angry. I'm still angry. I don't have to forgive those people. Why should I? They knew what they were doing. See, that's what bothers me. They knew what they were doing. I hear you. Okay. Let me go to the panel, because I want to get them engaged with you. And they may have some questions. But we know this. We know this on NASCA. And, of course, you know this. I know. Well, everybody knows this, that when a pedophile is a pedophile, he doesn't have just one victim. He has many victims.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
I wasn't his last.
No. Okay, let's go to the panel, and we'll be discussing all of this. Okay, we have Pamela first. I'm going to the top of the list. And Pamela, I'm going to open up your mic, and you say hi and ask some questions. Go ahead.
Hey, Tona.
Hi.
It's Tona, right?
Yes, Tona.
Yeah,
yes, ma'am.
Tona.
Okay. I know it's such a unique different name. Okay. You're Tona.
I know.
Yeah, it's good to be here with you. I'm just going to ask that you kind of take it a little slower as far as talking, because there's an audience to be able to, you know, be there with you. I know when I told my story, I was kind of nervous and wanted to get it all out, but you have plenty of time. Yeah, and just ask that you kind of relax and let's just go through this, you know, at a lesser pace so that we can get all the you know, all the information and get it, get it processed. So, this man that was grooming you, how do you think he knew how to do what he was doing? How old was he?
He was old. I mean, not old, like, obviously I'm going to turn 50 this year, so I think I'm a kid, but he was definitely in his 40s. He had to be somewhere in his 40s, because I knew he was older than my mother. And my mother was a teenage mom, and she had me when she was like 24. And so they started, my mother's in her 30s, so he had to be in his late 30s, early 40s.
Okay. So he probably had maybe many before you.
Let me just say this one part that, because you asked me something about this, so let me tell you the one thing that we found out later. I remember that, because he had three daughters, biological daughters, and I remember they never come to our house. And they could come to our house because he had molested his own biological daughters, but everybody was keeping it a secret. So he had three biological daughters that before he even came to us that he had already damaged. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on and sharing your story.
No, thank you for allowing me.
You're telling it very well. Yeah. And, continue to tell it. And, you know, what you're telling is helping other people know they're not alone, the audience, and it's empowering us as survivors too. All of us on the panel are survivors, and we just want to continue to hear your story and finally hear how you're healing and what have you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Toby.
You're doing a good job, honey. Yeah, just slow it down a little bit. You know,
yeah, I get
one thing that,
and I go fast.
Oh, I know. I get just like you. Sometimes my mouth goes like that.
Yes.
I know what you're
I'm
talking about.
I'm glad you reminded me of that, though, because now I'm conscious of it because I can't hear it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, listen here. We do know. In fact, I found out actually from research, you know, that in a single family home, where this is just a mother, okay, she's divorced and all this stuff. And unfortunately, I went through in my family too, okay, with my child, with one of my children. Kids are 20 times more accessible, and actually they're more 20 times more at risk, 20 times more than in an average family where there's a mother and father, 20 times. And I just found those stats last night, and that's from the HuffingtonPost.com. You can find out a lot of stuff there. But, I didn't know. We don't know. You think you know a person. You think that they're, very much in love with you. In fact, I went to school with this guy that I'm talking about with my son. And I really thought that he was a good guy, and his father wasn't, my first husband wasn't. So I figured, you know, this would be good, you know, to have the two together. He was a truck driver. Oh, my God, today my son's a truck driver. You know, what little boy doesn't like trucks? But he turned out to be a perv, okay?
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, we're finding out all different kinds of things. And one thing I did find out is, yes, 20 times more likely in a single-family home where there's just a mother, okay? And so I just wanted to throw that in there. Let's go to, we will go down to Bill from California. He's our founder. He's the founder of NASCA and also of the programs that we have during the course of the day. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, thanks very much. I want to, first of all, I want to get the name of the organization on the air because we should say it in its full length at least once. We're the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And that occurred to me because this is Child Abuse Awareness Month. We typically use the abbreviation NASCA, which is also our web address, but the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse at NASCA.org is the source for many, many projects. This radio show is one of them. And so we are really privileged to have Tona come on and tell her story, and I hope anybody listening understands, and I think Tona does because of what she said, this is basically by way of an invitation to anyone who's never told their story before. I mean, we know that the secrecy behind our child abuse, the facts of our child abuse is what really keeps us down. And we kind of get into recovery when we start sharing the story in appropriate ways, like with a counselor and so forth, but also maybe writing it out or maybe talking it out, like on a show like this. And I'm sure, Tona, you agree with this.
100%.
Yeah. It's an invitation here. And if one person hears this invitation, Tona, the way I figure it, it was worth doing. You know, because as Pamela and Carol have both said, we're all survivors. And all of us are kind of dedicated to reducing the statistics, whatever those statistics are. We're not trying to end child abuse by doing tonight's show, but we're certainly trying to reduce the statistics. And believe me, every single person that gets help, kind of changes the world, you know. That's the way it works. And it certainly changes their life forever.
Listen,
so Tony, you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Say again.
I applaud you for starting this organization because it is so needed. I say it all the time, enough. It's enough that we feel that we do not have a voice. And you have put people in a position to share their stories. And what I know for a fact, once you share your story, healing can take place. It could start. So I applaud you on the board, all of you who are behind this movement. I applaud you because it's needed, and it's needed more, and it's definitely needed in the African American community. And let me say this really fast to piggyback on the 20% of divorce homes or single family homes, that number is much higher in the African American homes in the inner city. So it's really prevalent in our homes because our men are locked up or they're murdered. So we really don't have fathers in the home. Like the statistics of, I did a paper on, I can't remember right now, but the statistics of having African American men, fathers in our homes is very small. So we really have predators coming. Like they come everywhere, but we are really preyed upon because we don't have a family structure. And we haven't had it for millions of years, and it has not stopped, and it's getting worse as time goes on. So this, what you're doing is very important to be able to educate people and give people the platform to hear our mm-hmm. stories so they can know that they can protect their children and educate and empower their children.
Exactly.
Well, that's exactly right. And we want you and anybody else to consider themselves a member of NASCA if they feel they are, and we don't register people, or there's no dues or fees ever. So you're a member of NASCA if you say you are, and one of the things we want to make sure happens is that each of us carries the message, so it does outreach. In other words, tries to grow the consciousness about child abuse in the communities, not just the survivor community, but the, you know, regular society communities.
Yes.
And by the way, all of them need help. Yeah, every one of them, because it happens everywhere. So anyway,
everywhere.
I'm really grateful for you coming on tonight, Tona, and I'll be quiet now and let you continue your story. I do agree with the concept of slowing down just a tad.
I will. I got you.
Yeah.
You have to bring it to my attention, because if not, I would just go. So, again, thank you for bringing that to my attention, because my brain, when I tell my story, my brain be working 100 miles an hour. So I'm ready.
Well, it's a lovely brain, but you can
thank
slow
you.
It down.
Thank you. I got you. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Carol.
We hear you. Okay. I get it. And I can understand it, too. We get so charged up, and she's so happy
Definitely.
To be here so she can share her story. And I remember all the many times I've shared my story. There is a sense of gratitude, like you said, that someone does allow for you to share your story, because it's
mm-hmm.
getting out there, and you know what? We are helping. And let me tell you something. When I wrote my book around 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, whatever, who's counting at this point, right? It was even written in Japanese, good God. All right, here's the
nice.
Point. Yeah, here's the point. Whatever we do with our lives, whether we're telling our stories, whether we have our music, whether we have our shows like we have tonight, whatever it is we're doing, we're educating people.
Yeah.
And I just want you to know this, that when I wrote my book, there was only one other book on Amazon about child abuse.
Wow.
Okay. And
wow.
mine happens to be a memoir, and the other girl, I think hers was a memoir as well. Now it's flooded. So you see, we
yeah.
are talking. What we have to do is to get society to listen and
listen.
To care.
Yep.
And to care. Yes.
I don't
now,
yeah.
What you've been telling us tonight is really quite horrific. And you see, in your case, it actually went through the family, because you're talking
mm-hmm.
about aunts and all this other stuff, and your mother and all kinds of things you're speaking about. And so often that is the case. And what you're doing by telling your story tonight, okay, I'm sure maybe you've told it before, and I see on
yeah.
your bio here, now, you are breaking the cycle. You're helping
yes.
to break that cycle. And that's something to be very proud of, and I'm proud of you. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know what I tell people? I've actually shared my story for 20 years, but I was able to pick and choose when I was able to share it. Like, I've always had a platform where I was able to speak in front of thousands of people. I was a consultant at Yale University, so I've always been able to talk, but I was able to pick and choose when I was when I shared my story. And we'll talk about
mm-hmm.
it later how I got into becoming an advocate, because I went from being a victim to the survivor,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm a 100% advocate. Like, I eat, sleep, drink, think all day, how can I get this message out? If it's been on your show, if it's on my own show, if it's been on somebody else's show, I never turn down a speaking engagement where I can talk about sexual abuse, especially coming from African Americans, because when I did it, we'll talk about it later, but one thing that people don't talk about a period in any household, but in an African American household, they be knowing, like, they do not say anything. They go to the grave with this stuff. And when you say, I'm breaking a barrier, when as a black woman and I stand in the front of a black church and say, hello, my name is Tona Buck, I'm a sexual abuse survivor, you can hear a pin drop. Oh, my God.
That's
they,
right.
They're like,
oh,
I
can identify
said,
with that.
Oh, my
oh, yes,
God.
Honey.
Because everybody wants to the church. I'm not knocking religion, but a lot of people mm-hmm. who've been victimized, you know, they've been taught that, you know, if I go to church, God is going to take the pain away, and I am not knocking religion. But the one thing that I've done over the years is been talking to some churches is that they've always been a me too. At the end of that service, somebody has always come to me and hugged me and said, thank you, because I've never told anybody. And that's what I want to do. I don't want any.
And that's
what
you're doing.
I don't want what they're doing to be in vain. And the thing is, and I also wrote a book, and the book is really PG, and it's
we're going to get to all of that.
Yes.
And what you're saying
really
is so right on, okay? It's so right on. And when I went to a book club, there was almost 200 people there, and they all stood up, the new people, to talk about what they wrote. They wrote about vacations. They wrote about dogs. About birds, bird watching. There you go, bird watching. Okay.
Nice.
When I had to stand up, I spoke about what my book was about, and yes, you could hear that pin drop. You bet. So you just yes, I understand you.
Yeah.
Now listen here. We've got three more people here that have joined the panel here. So
awesome.
let me, well, we have Darlene from Tennessee, but first we have Roberta from Oklahoma. She's been standing the most here of 25 minutes. Let me bring her on to say hello, and then we'll go to Darlene, and then we'll go to Don from Wyoming. Okay. Go ahead, Roberta. You have something you'd like to say. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say, first of all, that I'm glad that, you know, that I found NASCA, even though I haven't been on a lot lately, but I've been going, I've been starting with a new therapist, and but it is helpful to know that other people have went through things and survived, and I'm not alone, and, you know, I don't have to feel isolated or trapped or buried in someone, my dark secrets or somebody else's dark secrets, you know, because I don't remember a lot in my childhood because it's blocked out, but the good thing is that I'm not living in fear now, and my therapist believes my stories, you know, and I'm glad about that. So that's all I wanted to say.
That's awesome.
I'm glad about
that too.
Okay, sweetie, thank you for that. All right. So now let me go down to Darlene from Tennessee, and she too is an ambassador. Darlene, what's up? Do you have something that you want to ask or make a comment?
I want to make a comment.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to say that I'm proud of her for telling her story and coming on Blog Talk Radio, and she could go listen to it anytime because it is recorded. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for sharing your story. And I wanted to say, if people go to see a therapist and that therapist isn't helping, or that therapist is sadistic and touches you as well, because that's what my therapist did, and he locked the doors and everything. So my very first therapist, go run, get out of there, you know. Find a good one, okay?
You know? Yes, that's important.
That does
yes,
not
it
make
is.
It right to touch you and then use the excuse, well, you're going to get better with me doing this way, you know. I'm afraid me not.
I'm glad you shared that. Wow, that's big.
So, you know, if y'all have a therapist that acts like that, because we're already scared when we go, okay? So it's kind of bad when I already had a driver's license and my husband forced me going. He drove me up there and made me go to this guy and said it's okay for him to do this to me. I wish I had the backbone of standing for myself, but I didn't. And I want to know, if y'all go through that, please get out of there. Do not succumb to that. Please, I'm begging you.
Thank you for sharing that. I never knew that. I know I've had bad therapists in my life. Like, I've been to therapy and I haven't had good ones. I had some good ones, I had some bad ones, but I did not know of some crazy ones out there that would touch us. Wow.
Yeah, they said they're going to have to use unconventional therapy is what it said. But no. But and that would further stigmatize me, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
That's traumatized
you all over again. Wow.
So when you go to therapy, if there's a bad therapist, don't just look back. Run.
Yes.
Run.
Yes.
There you go. All right. Thank you for that, darling. Thank you for that. Well, you know, that's so true. That's so very, very true. You have good ones. You have bad ones. The first thing a person should ask when they go to a therapist is, do you understand about child abuse and what happens to a child as they mature and they don't get the help that they need? It then goes into adulthood. It affects our whole life. Okay, that's what it does.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very important. Thank you for that, Darlene.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I didn't mean that. Okay. Let me go back down to Don, Wyoming. Here we go.
Well, this is my first time calling in, and I'm a senior, and it wasn't sexual abuse. I believe it was from my dysfunctional family, and it's something that had made me different. And because I wanted to be a good boy and do what Mama and Papa said, I just developed an attitude, I guess that was. And long story short, I'm over 80 years old. In the last 10 years, I had become a hypnotist. And I worked with a lot of people, and as I worked with those people, I realized that I was those people. And I'm on this quest to get back to what I could have been, or to what I will be. And I'm calling in now to start this. And here's an interesting side effect. My daughter is 20 years younger than me, and because of what happened to me, it also happened to my family, and then it's happened to her family, and it's something that it's coming out, if that's the right word, about it, and helping educate people is what I'm after. But we just talked about it today, and getting both of our acts together. So I forwarded her information to you, your information to her. And she's already been working with other groups, but she's very excited about this. And quite honestly, I'm choking up as I talk about this. So thank you for being there and for this opportunity to share, to get started on my path to you. Thank you very much.
Well, let me say something to you, Dawn. We're here Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays for people to come on and tell their stories, okay? So even if you just listen, or if, and you know, in the near future, say, maybe you want to, you know, you reach the point where you want to tell your story, too, we are here.
Oh,
and
I
you would get a...
I want to...
Yes. And
I
want to you would
tell
get
my
a hold...
Story.
You do want to tell your story? Okay.
Yeah,
but
I'm not ready
but
to
tonight,
yet. I'm not ready to.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all right. At a different day. Because tonight it's Tonya's it's her story night. So we're going to have to get back to this. But please, yes, you can get a hold of Pamela Lockridge. If you look at the front page of the front page of at NASCA, NASCA.org, you have it right in front of you. If you look all the way down to the left, in the gray area.
You'll see
Pamela Lockridge, and she has an email there. She may have her telephone number there too as well. And when you're ready, you can tell your story. And if you want to listen to a few more episodes first, that's fine. And we'll go from there. okay? And hopefully I'll be the one that will be on a Friday night, and I would love to interview you, okay? So
thank
there
you
is
very
hope,
much.
And I'm glad you're here. We're all glad you're here, and we're here to support each other. And so welcome to NASCA, okay?
Thank
welcome
you,
to
Matt.
NASCA. Okay.
Thank
now
you.
Let's get back.
Gotcha.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Awesome.
Let's get back to our guest here. And you were talking about, my God, you were talking about the people in your family who became aware of all this abuse that was going on, and also, too, wondering probably why your mother was with this person and so forth. So why don't you go from there?
So once I told my mother what happened, I think what's bad is to be a victim and then to be re-victimized. Does that make sense to you? Like when you tell someone, and it's not like she did not, and probably the only reason why she believed me was because my sister is the favorite, becoming, like when she would be getting victimized, obviously we didn't know that this man was victimizing both of us at the same time. But when she would get victimized, she would close the room and she would just go read. I became a very angry. That's like when some people say that, you know, they can't remember, they suppress things. I can tell you that I had a Wonder Woman underwear like that. I don't know if it's better to have been able to suppress the memories or to have every memory, every smell to the T. And so so as I was telling my mother, you know, she apologized at the beginning. And then as years went on, she would say things like, I wish you would just, she said something stupid to me, like, I wish you would just get over it. And I was, so she said, I pray that you would just get over this. And I looked at her, I was like, listen, you did not shoot me, but you brought the gun in the house. So what I'm not going to let you do is to tell me to get over something I would never get over at all. It's nothing you get over. I learned to deal with this trauma. I have coping mechanisms in place. Get over it. And so so finding out as I got older, talking to this man's family, that they knew, that re-traumatized me over and over to the point that I remember, like, when I say that when I got my voice in my 20s, everybody, he had a huge family. I confronted everybody because my mother wasn't with him. And obviously, I still look the same as a little girl. And in our culture, to our household, he was not my father. But because my mom was dating him, he was my father. And all these people became my aunts and uncles, even though they were not blood. And it happens a lot in the urban community, in the black families. And so now this man's family calls me their, you know, their niece or their cousin. So I have this attached family of this predator. And so as I got older, they would see me out, and they would say, you know, Tona, you still look the same. And I'll tell you, if God is my witness, I'd be like, yeah, your uncle is a child molester, or your cousin is a child molester. Like, I never once, like, once I got it, I was like, I'm not being scared of them. Like, I'm not, and I'm not backing down from my mother. I'm not belittling myself or not sharing my story because it's not making her like she was a good mom or these people. I'm not. I just and it's difficult. It's not easy to do. Please don't make. I don't want to make it seem that way. It was a struggle at the beginning because I just knew in my heart that this family was going to continue victimizing other children, and I, in my mind, would have never wanted a child to ever go through the horror that I went through with that man. And so, so telling those people, and I, if God is my witness, at least four of them said to me, and I cannot make this up, it's in my book, at least four of them said to me, they knew that this man was a child molester. They said, you know what they said? They said and then one of the cousins laughed when they said it, and I was horrified. They said they used to call him like a little sin, like Chuck the child molester or something the child molester. And they would say that's what the family would call him. And I said, y'all allowed him to come down the street with two little girls? Like, who does that? So that horror, that anger, in my 20s, in my 30s, when I would speak to these, to the family members, and then they would say things like, why do you think my mom wouldn't let me come over here? So y'all let, this is why we have to break the silence and break it, because, so this is what normally happens. Okay, so the mother was raped by the grandfather, so she stopped her children from coming into the household, right? But didn't say anything. No one said anything outside the family. So this allowed this family to continue going into other people's homes, victimizing other little girls and boys. They wasn't just victimizing little girls. They were victimizing little boys, too. A whole
Absolutely.
Family of predators. And nobody
That's
said
right.
anything at the family. So I'm not going to call a cop and say that the cops or anything. I'm just going to make sure they don't touch my child, but I'm not going to care about nobody else's child. Who does that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was very re-victimizing and traumatizing to me over and over when I would talk to a family member and they would say that they knew. Like I remember one of the nieces said, my father said, I don't know why they let him go down there with them girls. So he knew. The aunt that came that night when I was he was trying to rape me, and it was panicking her voice, because she knew that, because she knew he was a child molester already. And she was my mother's best friend. She sat in my mother's face, and she knew that. You never told my mother that this man was a child molester, and that they knew him, Chuck the molester. That's what they called him.
Okay, let me ask you something. Do you think that during all of this time that you're speaking about, and then, of course, all the other people that already knew that this guy was a child molester, do you not think that your mother had some sort of inkling, you know, like a suspicion or whatever, that he could be abusing you?
Mm-mm.
You really
good.
Don't think so?
I really don't. So mm-hmm. I really don't at that age, because when we continue my story, I'm going to tell you some other stuff. Because once you victimize, it's like vultures can smell your brokenness all over the world and come into your household. So, but at that age, I don't think that she knew he was really. I think he was just a really good predator, and that
mm-hmm,
family
mm-hmm.
was not going to share. And up until I said something, I remember going into the store and seeing one of the cousins and the aunt, they were in the store. So when I walked in the aisle, they turned around. And it was like, she's the one who wrote the book about our family. And I was like, yes, I did. I wrote a book about our family. You're right. And they were like, thank you. I was like, you've got
a mouth on you like I do.
Girl, once I got it, listen, once I knew, because I was so angry that people knew and nobody did anything. And I was like, I'm not going to be the one. I'm not going to be the reason if I cannot let another child at the hands of that family be victimized again. And so I have a very strong personality, even from being angry to powerful. So I do have a voice, and I do roar as much as I can, and I shut that family down. And I've had so many of that family members, they would never say anything, but came to me in private and thanked me for writing that book and supporting that family.
Let me ask you something. When you, first of all, we're going to slow down a little bit, but
okay.
I'm just curious, because so many of us, all right, so many of us, we get involved with alcohol, drugs, maybe we do cutting, you know, all kinds of things. Things that are very negative to us. Maybe they're overeaters, people, or undereaters, you know. You have the bulimic people and the anorexic people. Let me ask you something. When you were going through all of this at such an early age, okay, what the heck was going through your head? I mean, you knew that it was wrong. Not at one point you thought it was love because he was grooming you. I understand that. Okay, so what year would you say that you became aware that this isn't right?
Well, I knew it wasn't right. I didn't know what it was called. I didn't know what he was doing. I really didn't know what sex was. Obviously, I didn't know what sex was. But I knew what he was doing was wrong when my mom hit me. So let me give you my medical history. So by the time I was like four, I started wetting myself again.
Regression.
A couple times I thought that, you know, that was going to deter him from wanting to molest. He didn't care. And so, like, even at a young age, I was like, maybe if I, you know, pure myself, he won't touch me. He didn't care. Mm-hmm. And so I was saying that I had kidney issues and the doctor never asked. And I know it's back in the day, but so then there was a time that I went that and then he asked me, you know, when you pee, because I didn't like urinating because it felt disgusting.
Yeah.
So I would hold my pee for hours. To this day, I'm being honest, to this day, I am not, I see people go to the bathroom a lot. I'm still not the one that go to the bathroom a lot because I associated it when I was younger to something very negative. So I would not use the bathroom. And so my kidney started messing up because of it. So my mom constantly took me to the doctors, and the doctors, you know, called my mother back, and he was like, well, does it hurt? And I was like, yeah. And he still didn't go into details of asking me why was it hurting or whatever. He just assumed that I had a kidney infection. And I remember, you know, my mom telling me that the doctor called and said I had a kidney infection. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, they monitor me. And I think I probably wet myself until I was probably seven.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like 7 years old, I was still wetting myself. And my mother didn't care. As long as I knew how to, you know, wash my own sheets. She didn't. Once the doctor told her that I had a kidney infection, that was not a bother to her. She taught me how to wash my sheets, and she was like, you know, she's going to be okay. When I got a little older, nobody asked me again. I had ulcers, like going into my 12. So let me tell you, when I was young, I didn't know. But when I was 12 years old, I remember walking past a TV. It was like a Lifetime. One of them little after school little thingies, and that was the first time I heard about good and bad touches. It hit me like a brick that what they were saying had happened to me, and I am not lying to you. When you talking about an angry black woman, I became so angry, and I hated me, and I hated the way I looked, and something had to have been wrong with me. I remember, like, what was wrong with me that this man wanted me at 3 years old? Like, at that time, I didn't know that he was just sick. So I had all these questions, and I told a friend of my best friend at the time, he was a guy. We've had some friends since he was 4 years old. And I told him that year what the guy had done. He was the only guy that I had ever told. And he 12 or 13, he didn't know what to say, what to do. And so he never told anybody, and I never said anything else about it either. But I remember, because we were friends, when I heard it, and I called him hysterically and saying, this is what this man did to me. So, because at this point, what messed me up worse, I think, like I said, I think it's better because if I didn't know what he was doing, but once I found out exactly where he was born and that it was wrong, I changed into this very angry, uncontrollable. I became the mean and nasty attitude in the family. I don't know what's wrong. Nobody asked. I don't know why she's so mean. I don't know why she's always lashing out. And I was not a nice person. Like, I am being honest. I was very, very not trustworthy to people anymore. It changed my whole personality. Like, I was withdrawn. When after he left, like, I just remember, and I put it in my documentary, I remember at 7 years old masturbating, giving my own self orgasm. I didn't know what it was at the time, but I just remember needing that release because this man had been doing it for me for so long that I would literally give my – I would stick objects in my vagina. I would stick objects. That's what he would do. At 7, 8 years old, I remember clear as day, I used to take the hanger. Like, it was like – don't you know, like, back in the day, you would go to the go to the cleaners, and they would have, like, the white little piece in the middle of the hanger that they would put the pants on. I used to break those and stick them in my vagina until I would have orgasms. Didn't know what it was called, but I needed to feel that relief. Like, he had my body so screwed up that I didn't know. I just didn't know. So those are things that continue to happen, like the nightmares and those still, you know, up until I'll be 50 in a couple of weeks, I do have stuff, coping mechanisms for it, but they don't. Every time I have to meet a Me Too, it's traumatizing, and it makes me go back because it makes you remember, you know, exactly what you experienced. So this has been a very, you know, suicidal, like, hating myself to the point that, you know, I didn't want to live, and But just because I was raised in a Christian household, the only reason why I'm still here today, and I'm being honest, is because I was raised in a Christian household, I believe that I would go to hell if I killed myself. But don't please, there was not a day that went by that I was not trying to contemplate what would be the easiest way to just stop this pain, like to stop the nightmares, to stop. I hated me. Like, the hate that was in me was, I hated them. I hated me. I don't know.
Well, let me tell you something. That's very, very common, okay? That you're talking me right now. I hated everyone too. I wanted to twist this one's head off. I wanted to punch that one in the face. I wanted to, you know, and all these things. And I would walk around the house with my fists clenched. I wanted to punch people, and I was just so angry until finally I just dropped to the floor. I was so exhausted from hate. And I was exhausted, baby, because it was just too many of them, okay? So I turned into an athlete. And that athlete, you too? Okay. Yep. All right, I was a runner. I used to jump the hurdles.
I was a star track runner.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, you see, this is what happens. We have to turn to something that's positive to help us get out of the negative and also to get rid of that terrible suicidal ideations, because that's what I had also, and that's what you had too, where you sit and you think about, you know, killing yourself. My friends were the same way. We all came from dysfunctional homes. So I understand all of that. And that's a terrible place to be. Let me go to the panel, okay? Because I know the Pamela is going to want to ask some questions. Go ahead, Pamela.
Hello, Tony. You're telling your story great, and we're getting a lot of the deep feelings and, you know, understanding, you know, how devastating this was to you. So catch us that thing that grounded you, that made you, you know, like you said, you became an athlete. Did that have anything to do with education at all? I mean, sometimes you do that.
So I was blessed to have a big brother, right? And I felt like once I got older and I looked back, I felt bad for him because once the guy left out the home, he became like the man of the house per se. So everywhere he went, I had to go. And my brother was a star athlete. He played basketball. He was a track star. So by the time I was about 8 years old, by the end of my 7 or 8, when the guy left, my brother took me under his wing. And so I would go to track practice with him. And then by the time I was 8, I was, competing in track. Listen, getting out of school was my safe haven. School was my safe haven, and being an athlete was my safe haven. But I always had two personalities. I tell people that all the time. I know both of them. I'm not bipolar. I know both of them. I deal with other mental illness, but bipolar is not one. And let me explain that when I say that. So when I came home, I was angry. Like, I hated being home. I fought a lot on the street. But when I was in school, a teacher would never know. I was, like, the class I was popular. I was the class president. I was the, the track star. That school was my safe haven. And, It was my safe haven. I hated being home because I'm just telling you about the one predator. I don't know how long you want me to wait, so I'll tell you about the other predator too. My mother attracted predators.
I was going to ask you if any other incidents happened, like did you go to college?
Yeah, I was a fourth generation teenage mother with 4 scholarships to college. I got pregnant my senior year in college with 4 full scholarships, and I got pregnant, found out too late, and ended up being a fourth generation teenage mom. Yeah,
Got
pregnant at 17. Yep, to an abusive person too. Why wouldn't I? Like, why wouldn't I just? Why would I not attract an angry person, and I was angry, or attract a violent person because I was extremely violent? So, yeah, so me and my son's father fought the whole year, and I'm glad that I had some type of wisdom because I remember saying to myself, either he's going to kill me or I'm going to kill him, but my son is going to be paralyzed So I'm going to leave. And I was able to leave after that relationship in a year. But, no, it continued. Oh, no, it continued. After my mother left the first predator, by the time I was in the fourth grade, she was married to another predator, but we didn't know he was a predator either. Again, African-American family, woman with three children, a man comes in with a good job, and you think he is God sent, and he was into church, and he taught us the Bible.
Okay.
We
don't have too much time left, so we need to continue going on in your story.
Yeah.
So now you're
all right. Well, hold on here, Pamela. I want to get the rest of the panel here because we have a nice panel. Okay. Bill, go ahead. Do you have a question you want to ask or a comment you want to make?
Not. So much as to say that, the process by which we're, the facts of the story that we're hearing tonight, Tona, are, your facts. They're a little different for everybody, but the feelings are really what's important because those are the things that we share. You know, we really share the feelings, not the facts. And it's astonishing, frankly, how universal those feelings are, the things that you share. This is why Carol responds, well, I did that too. You know, we all do. We're all thinking that way. So you're doing a great job. I don't want to take up a lot of time, but I'm
Thank
so delighted you're here. I'm glad we have a nice panel for you, and especially including Dawn, who's from Wyoming, I think. It's kind of nice to have somebody who's here for the first time, and I want to assure him that, he's going to be asked to share in a couple more minutes, and we're really happy to hear him. That's who we do these shows for, somebody like Don. That's who we do them for. So I know Darlene would like to communicate with Don. I'll just let him know that, and maybe she will after the show. But for right now, Don's really welcome. He's the point, okay?
Yes.
So thanks a lot, Carol, and back
Thank
to
you,
the panel.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you're doing a fine job. And, you see, like I told you at the beginning, we relate to all so much of what you're saying with the anger issues. That's why I was laughing because you and I are athletes. I mean, I was. I'm not now. I mean, I could run if I had to, I guess. I don't know. But, we have to get rid of that pent-up anger and the issues that we're going through in order to move on. We're not shoot someone or hurt someone or whatever because we've gone through so much. Let's go to Darlene here and see if she has something that she'd like to ask. Or make a comment.
Well, I like to say that I would have been more of an athlete if I didn't trip over my own 2 feet, you know.
That's okay.
No, but at PE, you know, when we would be timed for running and we had to pace ourselves, and I was shocked when they put us with a team. So I made an F, the other person made an F, okay? And I know this other lady, she was an athlete. I mean, I knew she would get an A. And I ended up getting an A. I mean, I just about ran the whole mile, you know. And just because I know that it's part of, and I had to lay down on the ground and everything, get my breath. But anyway, she come up to me. She said, "I wish you hadn't have done that because I really didn't want to try to run to get an A. I just wanted to run and pass."
Oh my God! Well, we'll have our experience.
You made an A. I'm like, oh no.
Well, we all have our experiences. Yes, we do, darling. Yes, we do.
Yes.
And but we all have so much in common, you know, with the anger, the grief. We didn't have a childhood. All these things that we go through. That can be another show on its own. What we go through as survivors. And I certainly hope that you come back and you can be a part of that panel. Okay.
I would love to.
Yes, you bet. It's a Monday through Friday, and you can look at the front page, too. Everyone should look at the NASCA front page, NAASCA.org, and look what it has to offer. Go down to the red lines, open them up, menus drop, and there's a wealth of information. I use it all the time. Okay. So, thank you for that, darling. And let me go down here to to Dawn.
Can I say one last thing?
Yes.
Can I say one last thing?
Okay,
go ahead. Can I say one last thing?
Yes,
I want to let her know that we have Zoom meetings Tuesday, Thursdays, and Fridays during the daytime support groups. So, and I'm opening that up to Dawn and her and the
mystery.
Yes,
that's awesome. Y'all are amazing.
It's virtual. You can look at each other and all this other stuff. Okay.
And it's not recorded.
Yes, it is. And let me tell you something.
It's not
we have NASCAR right
on
here.
That other thing. On the support groups. It's not recorded.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, that's good to know. We have both. And Bill has opened up a lot of things for people to get help. That's the point. And
Bill,
so if
amazing.
You want to go, it is amazing. And during the week, the Tuesday, Thursday, and I think she said Sunday. I forget what, Darlene, did you say Sunday? I don't know what she said. But anyway, it's right there on the front page. And so you can do that also. That's good, too. So there's a lot of help for people out there, you know, who are in trouble, in plain English. And then you've got the contact list. I'm the mouth. That's who I am. And I stay up until the wee hours of the morning. I'm the night owl. So I get a lot of calls. I talk to you all the time. I talk to other people all the time, too. You bet. And there's a lot to offer people here. Absolutely.
I love it.
So,
I love that I can use one as a reference.
We've got a lot of help here.
I love it.
I can be able
to use y'all as a reference for people because I meet so many different people who have our same stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And now that you will have the link also to your the shared story. I'm sorry, I'm kind of tongue twisted. Tripping over my tongue at the moment.
That's all right. Well, look at here. Let me get back.
We're talking over each other too much. We need to stop
I'm trying to run the show here, so hold on a second. Okay. So, all right, here we go. Now, we've got thank you for that, Darlene, bringing that up. Okay. So let's go down to Dawn and see if he has a comment that he'd like to make, okay?
Yeah, Dawn is very much enjoying listening to everybody and hearing the same problems and what I'm working on myself, I'm looking for a resource that understands what I go through. I don't want to dwell on it for any length of time. I just want to get past it. But I have so much difficulty doing that because I don't have a lot of friends and, I'm not going to go to a bar and talk to the bartender anymore.
I wouldn't do that.
No.
Well, let me say something to you, Dawn. Okay, you've got NASCA now. Okay, NASCA has several things to offer. We have this show here, and on Tuesdays and Thursdays we also have professionals that come on. They're the survivor professionals. They come on as they call themselves. So that's good. And then also too, we have the contact list. I'm up almost all night. I'm going to try to start changing that a little bit, though. I speak to a lot of men. Listen to me. You go down the list, find the contact page, and you go down the list. And I'm about three quarters of the way down, maybe. And I'm Carol Levine. I'm vice president. And you can call me up until, say, around 4 o'clock in the morning, okay?
Nice.
Okay, yep. Yes.
I'm still up.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would very much like to do that.
Yes. And
Dawn,
so
if I can interject, let me just interject. Dawn, you've hit the mother load here, okay? There are hundreds of us who are available to you right now. And over time, you'll meet many, many of them. It's up to you, but, you know, they put their phone numbers on the website for a reason. They come on the show for a reason. It's up to you to you know, reach back out to them. But the open invitation is yours. And, you know, you've gone from nobody to talk to the mother load. Okay.
I love
and
it.
You'll never know
I love
that.
It.
Yeah,
it.
You have a lot
talk.
Of people, a lot of people to talk to, you bet. So, but I'm just saying, like, I used to have trouble in the AM, so if I'm
Let him talk a little bit, Carol. Let him talk a little bit, tell us.
Go ahead.
Okay. So it's Carol Levine that I'll probably be giving a call to. And mm-hmm. I want to thank you for everything that your organization is doing. It's so helpful, and I developed a strategy in my mind to keep going and just thinking I was above it all, and I've been burying it for all these years, and it's time for a change.
Yeah.
Good for you, good for you.
And by you being by you saying that, change is getting ready to start. It's ready to start, and knowing that you have a support system as well. I can't wait to see the greatness that's going to come from you after this.
Okay.
That's right. You bet. Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. Okay, let's get back to your story because we are coming. It's getting a little bit late.
Okay.
All right. So let's see. Where are we? You can start talking actually about what you're doing today. Okay.
So let's move up to the present day of how I chose to turn my pain into my passion, to my purpose. That's my quote that I tell myself every day, that all I went through would not be in vain. So about 6 years ago, I was walking my dog. I was having a get together at my house, and my dog made it to the curb, and the car hit me and kept going. Knocked my boot off my foot, damaged my brain, trauma all over again. So anyway, as I was sitting home, I always wanted to do a documentary because in the African-American community, there are no documentaries about our being victimized and survivors. So I was, long story short, I had 10 survivors come to share their stories. Some had never shared their stories. I recorded them. I did a documentary called Why We Didn't Tell, because 90% of us was victim, all of us, but 90% of the people were victimized by people that they knew and trust. So we have 10 African-Americans giving me 10 hours of footage, at least, about them being victimized. I was horrified because I knew my story, and I knew I shared my story, but to sit there and hear other people really go into depth about their childhood, I knew I needed to do more. So I had organized Trenton's first HIV and AIDS walk when I was a child, and then when I was younger, then I organized Trenton's first cancer walk. So I was like, what can you do? Because at this point, I was just a survivor. When I heard their stories, I became an advocate. I was like, you need to do more. So I started an organization called Bold, Advising Over Sexual Abuse. And that year that I did the documentary, I got a group together. That April, we did Trenton's first sexual assault walk. We had about 300 to 400 people walk in, and we continued. Last year, we were supposed to have done the walk in 4 states, and the COVID came and it stopped. And the one thing about COVID that was a blessing is that I learned the power of virtual. So tomorrow, tomorrow morning at 12 o'clock. My Zoom starts recording to 11:59 tomorrow night. We are doing a worldwide virtual sexual assault walk. So people all over the world can register at tonafuss.com or rosawarriors.org. They register, they get a link, and they can walk in their house. They can walk in the mall. They can walk with a group of safe people because we're still in a pandemic. So I'm excited. At 9 o'clock in the city of Trenton, New Jersey, we will be in front of the State House with politicians, because it came from New Jersey to kick off this great worldwide event. And so until I die now, because I understand the power of virtual, I wanted to see this walk get bigger and bigger and bigger. And also during the process of my brain healing, I still have a brain injury to this day. It's healing, but, you know, I'm still under doctor care. I published 3 books. My first book is called That Second. It's about my childhood, very raw. Please, it educates children about good and bad touches. And then I wrote a book called Liberated. And I did all this with a brain injury and published all 3 of them within a 1-year calendar. So some good stuff come out of bad situations.
Doing fine. Yeah, that's great. That's great. You bet.
And we also given out over 600 people donate, like for my birthday month, after tomorrow, I will start a campaign, and people donate books, children books. I've given away about 600 books. My stop book to teach children about good and bad touches and their body parts. I'm the author, my daughter is the illustrator, and I've been able to give out at least 600 books free to children.
Good for you.
By donation.
That's great.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
And then this is about the body parts for children, for parents to help educate. That is so, so, so important. I just want to get this across to people. There are books out there available that will actually help you to, and videos too. I found some last night, actually. I found some things online. But where you can teach your children, all right, about the what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, about boundaries, and all these things that go along with it. And, of course, the grooming process, your little antennas are going to go up if someone's, you know, giving you too much attention, an adult. And instead of being with the adults, they're more with the children, too much with the children. It's fine to be with children, you know, so you're at a barbecue and the kids are playing ball. Well, the pedophile already has probably his prey, P-R-E-Y.
Oh, yeah.
Someone know this, I know this, you know, that are, he has in his mind. Or she. We don't speak enough about the women predators, okay? That's right. It can be either or. There's more men. There's more men, there's a lot of
women
too. And Huffington Post offers that too, that knowledge. But so this is exciting. Okay, I see here why we didn't tell a narrative about African American sexual assault survivors. Tonya explains this year will be our fourth sexual assault month walk, which you were just talking about. Tonya wants the audience to know that not just survivors, but the unaffected community as well. Now, that is so important. I love working with community, okay? If we can get our communities together, Tonya, to understand child abuse, what a wonderful thing that would be. And to care, okay, not just to walk away, we'll look the other way and do nothing, not make the phone calls that need to be made.
Yeah.
I hope that the phone calls go somewhere. I will give out the number for the 1-800 for a child number. A lot of times people are afraid of retaliation. You know this, I know this. I've lived in the city. I lived in New York. You lived in, you're in Trenton. I went to school in Princeton. I understand. And Camden
my daughter,
area. I know right
too.
Where you are.
Yeah.
I know right where you are. Okay. So the point is this. When people are afraid of retaliation, a lot of times they will look the other way. But I want to give that number out again because what they do at a child help, okay, that's what it is child help. They will make certain phone calls for you, and they'll also guide you as to what you can do. And so there's no more excuse about not making a phone call. If you see a kid who's being beaten right in front of your face, you call 911. Okay?
Exactly.
If you suspect that someone's being beaten or raped or whatever, neglected emotionally, whatever, maybe four or five houses down, which in city areas they have determined through studies, that every fifth house, there could well be something going on. Okay? Something. So make that call if you don't feel comfortable in calling in your own area. And that, again, is a 1-800-4-A-CHILD. And a counselor will come on. I called at 2 a.m. one night, and it was only a matter of about a minute or two. I heard music, and that counselor was busy.
Okay.
So it took 2 minutes to get to my call. So, and we had a good conversation, and we've had child help on several times now on our show. So
I love that.
It's very important. It's very important. So what you're doing is very important. And when I saw the word community, yes, you bet. When I saw the word community, okay, that
power.
Just struck
it's
something.
It's power in the community. It's power in unity. It's power with our voices. We call ourselves the warriors because I always say I vision every survivor as a lion, and if they tell one person a lion can shut stuff down. I've had thousands of parents come to me and say, Tona, what can I do to make sure this doesn't happen to my child? I said, the thing is, if the predator looked like a predator, walked like a predator, and talked like a predator, you wouldn't have him in your house or her in your house. I said, we have to empower our children, because once they know the predator, statistics is shown that children who are empowered about their body parts are more less likely to be victimized. So by us thinking we're keeping them sheltered and not letting them, educating them about their body parts, is hindering them. It's not keeping them safe. It's making them unsafe. And the one thing about my stop book is also I'm an educator. So it's also I'm going to do it this summer. It's a teacher edition too, where it literally it could go into the school and I write it word for word, because I know people who are very uncomfortable about this topic. I talk to the parents in a book. I go through a word, I react. I go word for word. Hello, I'm blah, blah, blah. So it is script. So you do not have to feel uncomfortable or embarrassed not to know how to gently discuss this conversation with a child, because that conversation can change that child's life. You're talking about one out of every five. We need to be doing more, and keeping it a secret and not discussing it is not helping them. It's putting them in a position that they could be victimized. And I say enough. My organization says enough. And like I said, until I don't have any breath in my body, I'm going to fight the good fight, and I'm going to use this movement until I have any breath. Enough. I don't want any child or any victim to think that they're by themselves. Talking to y'all tonight has definitely opened up my my mind, because again, we're not connected. Like I end up finding you because I was doing a virtual walk. One of the greatest things with doing a virtual walk, I got connected with so many amazing organizations. And just hearing what y'all are doing, I'm going to say it again. I tip my hat off to you. I promise you, I will be bragging about your organization every chance I get, because of the fact that I do a lot of speaking. I do a lot of speaking engagements about sexual abuse. That's what I told you. I don't turn anyone down. I don't care what time of the day. I will make time to fight for this movement. And like you said, we need to talk about it more, just like people talk about cancer and autism and health, more red for heart month. They need to be talking about April for sexual assault month as well. We need to get it out there in any venue as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Listen, can I make the following comment
just
briefly before we move forward?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to take ownership, Tona. This is your organization. It's our organization.
Oh, thank you.
You understand?
Yes.
So I want you to present it that way. You know,
and
it's
I
not
will.
Talking about somebody else's thing. It's your thing. And that's true for Don as well, and Darlene and
mm-hmm.
and Pamela and Carol. Mm-hmm. I mean,
mm-hmm.
all understand this. But
you're
a member of NASCA if you say you are, and you absolutely own it. It's your group.
I am going to own it. I am going to own this. I am honored to be a part of survivors, and not survivors, but advocates, and that's willing to put their stories and time and effort to help others in this situation. Because like you said, we've all been through something. Like all the survivors, different stories, but the same outcome. We were victimized.
Different stories, same process, and the tools are all yours too. Be sure to say the full name of the organization when you're talking to somebody, and then include, of course, the web address, which is the first letters, NASCA.org, because that's really where all the information about us lies, not on Facebook, not on these radio shows, but at NASCA.org. Anyway, I'll get off.
Let me ask
you
a question.
Thank you for letting
me
interject.
No, that's fine, because I have a question. Is it okay if I – because I have like a list of resources on my organization pamphlet. Is it okay if I put your link on there? Because I need people to know
absolutely.
That y'all is this.
Yeah, please do.
Because
absolutely.
I definitely affect a lot of African Americans. I talk to everybody, but my platform is definitely trying to get our culture to be more open to talk about it, and they see a black face behind it. Or in front of it.
Well,
but I need them to know about our organization, because y'all are amazing to me.
We have a lot of African American members, and we're delighted to be used as a resource anywhere. Okay.
Thank you. I promise you, you get my word. I will start.
That's great. That's great. You see, if we all pull together, if we do this, if we all pull together, like Bill uses the phrase of under one umbrella, okay, if we could all bring organizations together, which is not an easy thing to do, okay, and we fight for the right fight, okay, and with child abuse, for God's sake, our children are our future.
Yes, that's right.
They're
our
future.
Them now.
And if we don't get them straightened out now, okay, what's the future going to be like? And for those children who never, I wouldn't even want to think about it, okay? We know what it is already.
Yes.
So what we need to do is to work as one people when it comes to child abuse. One
people.
Because
they do it every other organization. The cancer, everybody work, breast cancer, everybody work together. Autism, everybody work together. Mm-hmm. This is something that we definitely, what you're saying is 100% true. We need every organization, color, creed, age, it doesn't matter. We need to really join together so that, because the more we join together, the more powerful our message will be and the more people we can reach. And we need to reach millions of people, because it's the victims out there.
Mm-hmm.
They think they're by themselves. They think that they're alone and they're the only ones, and they are not alone.
No, they're not. No, absolutely. I mean, there's at least 60 million American adult survivors of sexual child abuse in our country, just in our country alone. And don't forget, these are the ones that we know about.
Say it again.
We know about.
Not
how many don't tell?
Said,
what did you say before? What did you say before, Tonya? You said so many people don't tell, and that's exactly the truth.
They're not even counting us. They're not even counting the people that didn't tell. These are people who they got records of. So you know how many more out there that have not told? Oh, my God. It's millions.
It's disgusting.
It's
millions. That's one of my favorite words. It's disgusting.
It drives me, though. Like, when I hear stuff like that, it makes me that much more motivated to be like, what are you going to do next, Tona? That literally, that's what, as I'm talking to y'all, that's what goes through my head. Like, what other platform are you going to make so that we can help more people like us? That literally,
exactly.
That anger has turned to motivation for me.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah,
because you're putting it in
way.
A positive place. You're putting it in a positive place. And people who are highly motivated, who are able, okay, to go out and do presentations when we can, whether it be virtual or whether it be someday hopefully again in person, because I did a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, whether you go to universities, whether you go to grade school, if you can get in there, okay?
Yeah.
Or if you go to church organizations, I've been there. And, you know, listen, remember, pedophiles go wherever children go, okay?
Yep.
They're finding out all that stuff about, of course, the priests, and then, of course, also the Boy Scouts. There's just so many things, So we have a lot of work to do as a society, not just as an organization. It's societal. We have to become a society who is not going to walk over someone who's laying on the street, okay? They're going to help that person. And if they hear a child in trouble, they're going to make that phone call. You were a wonderful guest. We had a wonderful panel.
Thank you for having me.
And you can come on anytime you want, okay? You've got our phone number. You know what time to call in. Well, you're in New Jersey like I am, 8 p.m. So, you know, listen here and welcome to NASCA, okay? We need people who have all of that oomph in them like you do. So I enjoy that. It gets me all charged up, too. I know where you're coming from. Let's go out
and
run.
Yes, okay. I know, right? I will. But thank you. I want to say once again, thank you for allowing me to be on your show tonight. It was very inspirational, like I said, to just know that there are other people out there, movement, fighting a good fight for no more. So I thank you. Again, I applaud Bill for even starting this organization. I am honored to be a member now because I am going to claim
it. Well, we're honored to have you. How's that? We're honored to have
you. Thank you.
And Dawn,
if you ever need me, just let me know.
Give
us a call away.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you. Okay, I've got to wrap this show up, or okay. I don't know what's going to happen. It might blow up or something.
Okay.
Okay. I'll talk to you later. Thank you for coming
on.
You're
take
great.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Y'all be safe. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Love Talk Radio.